Hello and welcome to CRY 104 FM. Good evening, everyone. Today in the program, Life in Limbo, Any Hope for the Future, we have brought to you a panel discussion and interviews on what is a refugee, who is an asylum seeker, and what is direct provision. Also, bits and pieces from the celebrations of the UCC Refugee Week, true stories of current asylum seekers, and a whole lot more. So sit back, relax, grab a cup of tea, and brace up to experience life on a whole different level. That is life in direct provision. In our first segment, we'll be going to a panel discussion with the creators of this program to discuss the differences between a refugee and an asylum seeker. So I'm delighted to be joined by my fellow asylum seekers who were part of this program. So I'm delighted to be joined by Mandeep, Dolapo, Concilia, Fumi, and Dudu. I welcome you all. And the question for us is that what is the difference between an asylum seeker and a refugee? Because recently we have seen that UCC celebrated a refugee week. So were asylum seeker can be part of that week? So in that definition, asylum seeker come or not? So what do you think? Dolapo, what do you think? Why don't you go first?
Welcome, Asad. Asylum seeker is somebody who left his country for persecution and came to, and went and go to another country, submit application for protection. Or apply for application for protection. Why refugee is somebody who has whose application has been processed and given a stay in that country.
So do you think this thing is affecting us? Why, Mandeep, what's your take on this?
I think they give us a lot of opportunities. They gave us a work permission. We have a lot of limitations. Like some people, they're living far away, so they need transportation, but they can't get their learner permission, you know, for driving. And some people who they are staying here from long time, longer years, they still are waiting for their work permission. But the people who they are coming recently, they are getting easily. So that's the huge difference. So that's unfair. So it should be considered from the government. That's the big issue, I think so.
Concilia, would you like to add something to this?
Some of asylum seekers have got talents. Some are doctors, some are teachers, some are nurses, but they can't work. I would wish that the government can grant them permission to work.
We are placed in direct provision centers. So direct provision centers are those places where we wait until we receive the answer for our application, which we have applied for asylum. So let's have a bit of more views from our participants. What do they think of the direct provision system? So do they think it's good, it's bad? What are the realities they are facing right now? What is the difficulty they're facing there? So let's start from Dudu. What is your opinion on it?
Thank you, Asad. I will talk about the direct provisions whereby the asylum seekers are kept. There are two categories. We've got single family, singles and families. In some other provisions, there isn't enough accommodation for families because they'll just share one big room and you'll find that there is husband, wife, and children. Say two or three children in one big room. On the other hand, for those that are not married or just a parent with a son or a daughter, they'll also share one room. It will be smaller than the one for their husband, wife, and children. So I think they need to attend the situation because it is a big problem for both singles and the big family in terms of privacy, respect, and dignity. And at most, the problem comes with the management, whereby you find that these families will not be able to voice out their problems, if ever they are happy or not, one way or the other. And I think if maybe they can just make a suggestion box for everyone in the provision center to drop whatever he or she feels about whatever is happening in there.
Is there any fear? Fumi, why don't you go on this?
Personally, I am scared. I'm only 2 months in my center, 4 months in the system, but 2 months in my center. I met some other people there. They've been in the center for 8 years, 5 years, still awaiting their application. They don't have status yet, but they've been living in the center. I think they know the... When I got to the center, I told them so many things. I said my mind, what I was not comfortable with, all the things I noticed. But all I hear is, no, just keep quiet, just leave them. Let's just keep looking at them, because if you say anything, they will write to justice that you are rude. They'll report you. At the end of the day, you may be left in the center for another 5-10 years. You might not get your status because you and the management are not in one accord. So people are scared of talking. People don't want to talk. Someone like me, I am actually ready to talk. I can talk, but if I don't have people to back me up, if we are not on the same, I'm not joined by other people, if we're not in one accord, if we're not ready to say, yes, let's do this.
Okay.
Yes, I'll still be scared. But if I have people that pushes, and if I say, okay, let's do this, and they say, okay, yes, let's do it, why not? Then everything will move forward. But if I'm saying, hey, and some other people are saying B, then... Okay.
I think every one of us have different experiences. So if anybody would like to add something, Tolapo, why don't you add something to it?
Thank you, Azad. As for me, I have different version to this program. When I came to Highland, I ran away from my country because of persecution. But when I got to Highland, I was welcomed. When I got to my center, when I newly came, it was stressful. But as time goes on, now I'm 4 years there. As time goes on, things are changing. In accommodation times, I'm comfortable a little. Although it's not my final place, but I'm being given 3-bedroom apartment and I can cook on my own. As for accommodation, I think I'm comfortable, and food wise, I'm comfortable with the points they are giving me. We can buy. And the management tried a lot for me and my family. They've been helping. They've been good to me and my family. And the owner of the center has been good to me and my family. And I don't know, I cannot say of others, because we have different challenges. Last year, my daughter couldn't go to school, but this year she won a scholarship into UCC. And she's doing great in UCC, which I'm grateful to. And as for me, myself, I do volunteer with St. Vincent. And the people in St. Vincent, they are very good to me. And they've been helpful. My supervisor, my boss in St. Vincent, and my colleagues, the workers there, they've been good and helpful to me and my family.
We now go to the campus of UCC with Asad and Oswell, as they speak to students of UCC during Refugee Week.
All I know is what I was just recently told about them being kept while they're waiting their application. I don't know too much about it, but I think that they should await their application while they're with the rest of the community and with everyone else, so that when they get their application, they're already somewhat integrated.
I don't know much about it, to be honest, no. I haven't read much about it or heard much in the radio even.
I've heard about them in the news and on Twitter and on Facebook and things. I think that they're definitely the wrong way to go about things. Like, I don't think that asylum seekers are being treated fairly at all in them. And I don't think that there's enough money or time or effort being put into them. And it's just, it's not the right thing really at all, I don't think. I think there's a better way to go about doing it.
Just the bare minimum really, not that much.
Well, like, from what I know, like, I know that, like, when people come here from, like, different countries to seek asylum, they go into, like, direct provisions, and they could be here, like, 15 years and still not get, like, citizenship of Ireland, and they're given, like, €19 a week or something of pocket money, and they're just stuck in there. And it's basically, like, prison, that they don't really have a choice. They can't, like, have their own house and, like, have their own job and stuff like that. They're just kind of stuck in there, and it's not really fair because they've been here just as long as some of us Irish people that like have citizenship. So they should be given the same like amount of rights than those who have citizenship. Just because they're not from here doesn't mean they don't deserve citizenship of Ireland.
No, we will hear from Fumi and Dudu as they spoke to the students and the staff on the UCC campus.
Well, I have like people, personal friends who live in direct provision. I came to be aware of direct provision about 10 years ago. I helped organize an event to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Declaration of Human Rights. Back then, so we organised an event where over 1,000 people attended, and we organised people who were living in direct provision to come to our houses and to cook some food, and then the food was shared at the event that evening. So I've been aware of direct provision for over 10 years, and for the past 10 years I've been advocating to end direct provision. What do I know about asylum seekers and refugees? Asylum seekers in Ireland, they spend too much time living in direct provision. I think they should be allowed the right to work in Ireland. The Irish government has announced that it has given permission for people to work, but there are a lot of conditions attached to the right to work, and I mean, the right to work is not working. People spend too long in direct provision. I think a lot of people come from particularly, you know, conflict zones, parts of the world where there are problems, and living in direct provision exacerbates people's problems and exacerbates depression that people feel whilst they're waiting for their applications to be processed. I don't believe in direct provision. I don't think it should exist. I think, you know, nobody can be illegal. We're all human beings. And, you know, in an ideal world, I would believe to tear down the borders and allow people to freely move around the world.
Asylum seekers, I suppose, really, it's only fair that people, maybe if they're driven out of their own country and things like that, I think we should make provision for asylum seekers, whether they want to come here just for refuge for a while, or whether they want to live here or seek employment and things like that. I think we should be, the Irish have travelled all over the world to other countries and have been welcomed for years and years, going back a long time, and I think it's beholden to ourselves to do exactly the same for people that are struggling and that are looking for a better life, I think.
I don't know anything like substantial about it.
Yeah, I think I have, yeah. I remember when we were rowing, there was, one of the centres on Centre Park Road, is there one there? Or we used to walk past it when we were going to rowing because we'd walk down Centre Park Road and stuff, but yeah.
So I actually have some family that were asylum seekers and refugees. So one individual in particular that would be a close friend of our family was a refugee, and he unfortunately hasn't been treated very well, and he's had to go back to Nigeria and didn't really get any warning. It happened during the night really fast, and we've had very little communication now since. So
we don't always hear the stories behind the people living in the direct provision system. Now we go to Dolapo, who interviewed two asylum seekers on their personal experiences in direct provision system.
Hello, my name is Dolapo, and I have with me here in the studio, and I would like to introduce them to you.
I'm Miss Maseko. I come from Zimbabwe, and I'm in Millstreet Provision Center.
Hello, my name is Mandeep, and originally I'm from India, so I came here 5 years ago. So I'm living in a direct provision right now.
Mandeep, please, can you enlighten us more about what is direct provision?
Direct provision, actually the place they allow to the refugees people. They keep them separate from their own residence because they have to keep them there until they are not getting their final decisions on their applications. But as you know, now they are giving work permission, which is a very good thing, you know. So some people, they got a chance to get out from direct provision if they don't like the facilities they are providing to the peoples, you know, which is a very good thing. But some people, they have some problems, I hear, like hopefully they will think about it to sort it out, you know. So that's not a good, bad place. If somebody really can't do anything, so they provide them a place, which they are safe, where they are safe, you know, they feel safe.
Maseko, you said that is your second home. Can you call direct provision your second home? Is it like home to you? Can you cook by yourself? Can you do things as if you are in your own home?
In my center, they provide us with tokens of which you can buy your own food and cook for yourself. I don't know about the others. And if you have got any problems, you can go and ask the manager. He'll assist you with anything which you want.
Mindy, I will also ask you, because you've been in Island for a little bit, that's why. How do you want people outside there to know what is direct provision? Because the impression people outside have is that you have been given free health, free food, free accommodation, free everything, and you supposed not to be complaining. So why can you not tell me what you are really facing in direct provision?
Oh, as I have my little baby, sometimes I feel like it's very noisy, and as he is just 2 months old, so sometimes he feel hard to sleep. As you know, it's very important for a small baby to have a sleep, you know, a very good sleep. But sometimes I feel like it's terrible, like if the people, they are making noise and I couldn't stop them, unfortunately. That's my problem. Like, but sometimes we afraid to go ahead, like to share our views, share our experience with other people, because we afraid, like we don't know what's going to happen next. Maybe that's the problem, like, you know, some people, they have work permission, which is a good thing. So if somebody they don't like, they can get out from direct provision, they can have their work and they can move on, they can have their own places if they can do work, if they have some talent, you know, which is a good thing, if they have a good education.
Maseko, I would like to ask you this question. What is your fear of being returned to your original country?
My fear is persecution. The reason I came here, I came for protection. That's why I'm here.
So if you are returned to your original country, you feel you will be persecuted?
Yes, because it's not easy to come out from your country and go back.
Is that why people are afraid to come out? And is that why people, they feel restricted in the center?
I don't think people, they do really know what they are supposed to do in the centers. Some of them, unknown of the fear, they don't know what they are fearing of. Once you are protected, you are in the system, there's nothing anyone can do because you have sought protection in this country. So you can easily tell the manager where you are, your problem, and he can assist you if he can. And at the end of the day, I'm not the only one in the center. There are too many people from different countries with different problems. That's why we are here.
There were many events taking place at UCC during Refugee Week, and Asad and Oswell report to us from a few of the events on one of the evenings.
We are just outside WW5 Quadrangle in the UCC on location, where the information session for the scholarship scheme for asylum seeker is going to be held. So we are here to cover that event, and we will be talking to some of the panelists over here who are going to give some talk about this information session. And we are also going to talk to some of the participants, some of the attendees who will be attending the event, and to know their views about the information they are being provided.
Hi, my name is Anne-Marie Curtin, and I work for the EDI unit in UCC.
So what do you think this kind of program is going to help which class of people?
Well, the scholarship program is designed to give an entry route into university for people who are asylum seekers or refugees, and it is set up. So it is a scholarship bursary. So the fees for the course are covered, and living costs are given as well for the duration of the program.
That's great. Okay, so why there is a difference, what I have learned from the session, that there is a difference in application procedure for the 23 years old, older and lower than that or above than that. So why is there that kind of difference is there?
The mature student route was set up originally, I believe, as a kind of a second chance route for people who had maybe dropped out of formal education when they were younger and went off and got jobs and either didn't do a leaving cert or didn't do a very good one. So it was designed as a route in to third level education, where people didn't have to rely on leaving cert results or FETAC results to get a place, that they could come in on their own merits. So the mature student, 23 years and over, is designed so that people can come in, sit a test, stand on their own merits, make the personal statements, and they're not being judged by courses or exams they did, you know, 6-10 years ago. So it's a different entry route into university, so you're not tied into results.
That's great. And you have an interest form just under the information provided by UCC on the website. So have you received any applications or any interest forms from anybody so far?
Oh, yes. Yes, we have quite a healthy interest in this year's application route already. I haven't looked at it now in a while because I'm involved in an event this week, but the last time I looked, it was shortly after it was opened. There was very healthy double figures. So yes, there is quite some interest, and that's, I'm good. We're delighted to see that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Oswell. How was the session? Did you find it informative? Yeah, did you get all the information that you want?
Yeah. I got a lot of information. Just like thing is, I don't know before, but I get now. It's very clear. Just like I just what I want to be after 4 years. I got a lot of things, and I get all the information, and everything is very clear.
So how will you pay the money since you are in asylum seeker?
So I think it will take a longer time, just like they mentioned, because first I want to finish level 5, and then I need to, then when I finish level 5, maybe I can get my refugee status, and then I can apply very easily to get. Also, I would like to apply a bank account or a card bank, I think after 1 month.
Hi, my name is Olive Byrne, and I'm the head of access and participation here in UCC. And I am just going to comment on the fact that the cost of applying to college alone is prohibitive for people who are in the asylum seeking process here in Ireland, because the weekly allowance is beyond what the cost of the application process is. So as a university here, what we have been working with some previous asylum seekers and some of the students who were successful in securing the sanctuary scholarships this year is working with them and with their local communities and with management in the centres that they are in to see if there can be a local response to support individual applicants who are applying to college to help them with this cost, because we realise that the cost is beyond the means for most asylum seekers, because you know they have expenses that they need to use their weekly allowance for. So yes, it is very costly, and it's one of many barriers preventing asylum seekers from being able to progress onto third level.
Okay, do you think, apart from these expenses which will go into applying for the scholarship scheme, would there be any other expenses during the course period, maybe for the books or for the other material which is necessary for the course? So do you think there are some more expenses involved in this?
There is significance. Expenses involved in attending third level university. For students who are in a position where they have secured a sanctuary scholarship, we have put in place provision to allow for an allowance to cover those costs. So we have an allowance that will help the student get set up with buying a laptop, with books, and then a weekly allowance to help them with the daily and weekly costs of going to college, like travel and meals and so on. But that is for the students who are lucky enough to secure a scholarship. If a student doesn't secure a scholarship to come here, the fees to attend third level are prohibitive. And then the daily and weekly costs of attending are very high. So it is a huge challenge for any person who is in the asylum process who has no source of funding to attend third level.
I'm just outside the Aula Maxima where this session is going to be starting in a few minutes, which is about what is a refugee. This is a panel discussion. We are here with one of the organizers of the program. We will have a quick chat with him and let's see what is going to be in the program and what is going to be the in the session. So let's find out. So would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's David Clancy. I'm an ordinary committee member on Star Society. Tonight we're holding a conference to deal with the just talk about the crisis that is people in direct provision currently in Ireland. We've a numerous number of names on tonight. We've one gentleman from Rohingya. In Burma, we've one gentleman called we've one lady called Naomi, who's very interesting. I know I work with Naomi myself. She basically runs the Cork Migrant Centre, and I'm actually collaborating with her and trying to do an Irish digital show to raise money for the Cork Migrant Centre and for Star Society yourselves. So that will be held on the 17th of April in the Aula Maxima itself. A lot of the mothers who go to the migrant centre, you know, they don't get an awful lot of time off. So I think it's every Friday for 2 hours, a few of our members of the society come and they, you know, look after the kids while the mothers get a little break. I'm also teaching along with a few other members of the committee. And so essentially what's there, so we're just trying to bring the crisis that there are people in direct vision into the public spotlight.
There were many talks from asylum seekers during Refugee Week at UCC, and Serge went to one of the events and spoke to a few people attending the event.
I'm here in Aula Maxima for talk about asylum seekers and refugees. I'm about to ask one of the participants one or two questions. Any relation between what is happening in your home country, Italy, and what is taking place happening with asylum seekers or refugees in Ireland?
Well, I think in Ireland there is this issue with direct provision and the fact that people are not really allowed to work and they're kind of put in these places which are quite kind of isolated and they cannot cook up for themselves. But there is still a small amount of refugees here in Ireland in comparison to places like Italy. And I think in Italy there were a number of attempts made for refugees to integrate in society, but what we see now is that this right-wing government is trying to undermine these efforts. So I think, you know, I think in both countries there is room for improvement, of course, but we see that when we have a very strong populist right-wing government, so things are kind of going wrong. And I think, you know, I'm sure in Ireland there could be improvements as well, but I see that there's still some kind of solidarity that is being enforced by organizations and I don't know, the general public in a way. And I think in Italy we're kind of losing it in a bit. Like this, there is, because the media are very much doing this anti-immigrant, anti-other campaigns. So, yeah.
What do you think asylum seeker could do to improve their situation and sometimes, in some cases, alarming situations?
Well, I think the right to work should be a basic, especially here in Ireland, which is still not there. And I think also the fact that people are being put in these isolated places without public transport and access, it's really not helping them at all to be able to find a place in the new society where they are. So I think these are things to be lobby about and to work on.
What do you think of the situation of asylum seekers and refugees, especially asylum seekers across the country in Ireland here?
Well, my name is Vera Stjanovic. I'm actually the coordinator of Better Together. I set up a group that works with women seeking asylum, mostly women living in direct provision in Cork City and County. And the reason I set up the group is because when I found out how people were living in the same city as I was and my family is, I just couldn't believe that this was happening, you know. I remember the first time I heard about it, I was like, it can't be that dramatic, you know, it can't be that bad. And then I found, then you just keep hearing more and more about it. I think it's absolutely appalling. I think it's inhumane, and it's when you run away from conflict, any sort of conflict, to seek shelter somewhere else, this is the last thing you expect, to be locked up somewhere and not be given your basic human rights, you know.
What do you think asylum seekers themselves should do, could do, to improve their situation?
Improve their situation? It's a tricky one, because you're expected to integrate, but a lot of people aren't given the opportunity to integrate. So I think that the main thing that people can do is to speak out. There's a lot of people now who are, you know, writing Facebook blogs and that kind of thing. So it's just to get your experience out there, because there's a lot of people, and a lot of people who I know, who still don't know anything about direct provision. So I think the main thing you can do is just to get your voice heard and to have your experience shared.
Thank you very, very much. Enjoy your talk.
We continue our program with more stories from asylum seekers living in direct provision system. We go now to Mandeep, who is interviewing Dudu and Oswell about their personal experiences.
Dudu, what is the direct provision actually?
A direct provision is a place or the apartments or rooms for these asylum seekers that are being given to them when they come to the country, so that they just keep themselves comfortable there. They know they've got shelter.
As you said, the direct provision where they kept the people, the refugees who they are seeking asylum here. I would like to ask you what facilities you are getting over there. Like, would you like to explain?
Yes, it varies, because we've got two categories. There are those that are single, and there are those that come as a family. So when we are given the houses or those apartments or rooms, it differs according to different kinds of direct provisions. In some direct provisions, the singles, they share a room, like maybe 3 to 4, they share one room. And then with the families, again, you'll find that maybe I've got 4 kids, but I have to squeeze myself with the kids in one big room, you know, so not giving enough privacy or respect for myself and the kids. And at most, the families, you find that maybe the kids are so grown up that they are still living in, though it's a one room big, but the kids cannot do whatsoever they want, their own time, even the parents, things like that.
Oswell, he's single, so would you tell me about your situation, how you are living there, how do you feel? Is that good or bad?
To be honest, I think the living conditions are very horrible, you know. It's not easy to come in your own country, coming here, and then you share a house with a total stranger. One, it's like you have different religions, different languages, and you can't meet, because there are some of people who come here, they don't even know how to speak in English names. You know, it depends which country you're coming from. So it's a very biggest challenge. You know, the living conditions are very old, because I've seen people going mentally disturbed, like going so mentally disturbed with the living conditions. In my own experience, I say that's you can't put a person to stay on those conditions, you know, like, and I believe if we stand as one, we can manage, like a program, like whereby the government maybe will manage at least a long time ago, when you come seeking asylum, they were giving you a house. That's a better option. But I know in these days in Ireland, there is a housing crisis. But if they give people opportunity, like, because living in a direct provision, one, they cook for you food. They, you know, like, it's like your life is programmed. and then it's different. They tell you, you have to go and profess from 7 to 10. What if I want to go at 11? Yeah, maybe I slept late, wake up 11, there's no breakfast. I have to wait for lunch again. Again, lunch from 12, it's an hour again. If I miss that hour, I can't. And then again, you know, it's programmed for someone, which is, I think, if they can change that situation.
So what do you think about the work permission? Is it good thing that they change, that they give an opportunity to refugee people to come out and do some work, to contribute the country, you know?
I think the work permission is good, though it has some disadvantages, because if you understand it very well, you can only start to work after 9 months, and you should be at some workplace whereby you will have your manager or so ever in charge who's going to give a reference that you've been doing some volunteer work. And you find it so difficult that, okay, I do the volunteer work and then I go and apply for a work permit. And where do you start working? Because you need to have some experience of some sort, because they will ask you, what do you have? You're like, oh, I don't have anything. What have you been doing? It's like nothing. It's just volunteer work. Maybe, let me say, you were cleaning, you see. So it's so difficult to even get that job, although now you do have that paper. In that way, I think it does give a problem.
Oswell, I would like to ask you, let's say you got your decision positively, and after that, what would you like to do? And you want to stay in a direct provision, or you would like to be out from there?
Basically, I think Ireland is a very good country. I will stay here in Ireland. I love it here. Besides me taking too long to get my paper, yes, I prefer being here, you know, and I think in 3 years' time I will see myself maybe here in university pursuing my career. Yeah.
What about you, Dodo?
Yes, I do. I do like Ireland, and I'm seeing myself up there in the top, you know, if I get enough opportunities, you know, like going to the university, upgrading myself in whatsoever course I would like to take, because as for now, there are limitations, maybe age-wise. I think if I can get that opportunity and upgrade myself.
We are here in Glusman Gallery. Please, Mr. Tag, how long have you been working with the asylum seeker?
I guess I've been working here in the Glucksman in UCC for about 8 or 9 years now. And back in 2014, our good colleague, who you know, Mike Fitzgibbon, sent an email to all of the university staff. And his email, I suppose, was highlighting the conditions of direct provision centres, and the lack of opportunities that were there for young people and for children. And so his email was, I suppose, was brought to our attention by our director, Fiona Carney, and we decided we would put in place a project or a series of workshops for children. And so by the end of 2015, November, December time of 2015, we began our work with young asylum seekers, with children from Kinsale Road Direct Provision Centre and from Glowntown, from Ashburn House Hotel, the accommodation centre there. And children primary school age came to us for that first project. It was called Our Place. It was looking at the idea of place, both imaginative and real. And it's really, we recognised straight away the importance of the work, the positive impact it was having on these children. And so it drove us on to develop a kind of a much larger programme. So that was back in 2015 that we then continued on and began working with teenagers, as you know. have carried out a number of integration projects with scouting groups and local scouting groups and children from Drashan Castle Direct Provision Centre. And so for the past 4 years now, we've been running lots of different projects, events and programmes. And the last 2 years, the Arts Council of Ireland have given us money towards development of a programme specifically for young asylum seekers, which is brilliant acknowledgement of the work and the importance of the work.
What kind of activities do you do with the young asylum seekers?
Yeah, so I suppose we're a contemporary art gallery and visual art is our core medium. But across that, we've developed a range of projects. So I suppose what we're trying to do with the projects and programs that we run is offer the young people a range of experiences. So we've made films, we have done photographic projects, drawing, painting, a whole range of materials been used and a range of techniques. And the young children and young people get to work with professional artists, artists of note, who exhibit their work widely, and really important artists, local artists, and they get to experience what it is that these art, what motivates these artists, and what drives their work. And a big part of, I suppose, the projects as well is that it has a public outcome. So we're very keen that the creativity of these young people from across the different centres is showcased in a public arena, and a lot of our projects have ended up with displays either in Fitzgerald's Park or across the city, but beyond the museum, so beyond the university even, in the wider community. So the creativity of these young people are really visible for all the public to see.
As you know, this week is the UCC week. Apart from it being a way of inclusion and diversity, what are the other goals of having a refugee week?
I guess it's and this is the second year there's been a refugee week, and it's become a very important part of the university calendar. And I think it's incredibly important to be sharing a message of inclusivity and sharing the values of the university with all of our students and staff. And some of our students and staff are really are very in tune and know exactly what's happening within direct provision centres, what's happening within kind of the politics that surround that, to the living conditions, to the opportunities that are presented with people who are coming to our country. And some of our staff and students may not be so knowledgeable about it. And I think it's important that that message is shared. It's also an important moment to reflect on how far we've travelled as a society and to reflect on what actions need to be taken. And it's most important that the voice of our people who have come to our country most recently, or maybe living within direct provision centres, are recently moved on from those centres, that their voice is heard within a university context.
What do you like to tell people to know about the asylum seekers?
Well, I suppose I've been working with young asylum seekers and young children who have been in direct provision centres since 2015, and it's been an incredibly positive experience for us. It's been an incredibly emotional experience for us. It has changed the dynamic of the museum and the way we work. It's seeing the positive, upbeat nature of these children and what they can creatively, what they can contribute to our society is very important. It's key message for us as a museum, as a civic space, is that we provide opportunities for all of the community, and it's become a really important part of our program that young asylum seekers get their voice heard, their creative voice heard within the museum and beyond. And it's been, I suppose, an incredible learning curve for us as well, learning about the experiences of different people who are living within our community, and has certainly opened my eyes up to what changes need to be made, how we need to work to make sure that we're a much more welcoming society. And I hope things like UCC Refugee Week can maybe start to see that change really happen, to maybe unite people to ensure that actually we are Ireland of a thousand welcomes.
The main event on Friday of UCC Refugee Week was a gig at the Glucksmann Gallery. And as a team, we all went along to support our colleague, Assad, who was performing at the event. We go now to Dudu and Mandip as they report on the event and as the team speaks to people before the event took place.
As part of Refugee Week here in UCC, today is a sanctuary concert at Klugsman Building. Here at the concert, the band Citadel are performing along with Ophelia McCabe, Stevie G, with Outsider YP, they are all rappers, and Citadel, a world music band. We have Mandy here who will tell us more about Citadel and what Citadel do.
Thanks, Dudu. It's a group of asylum seekers who refuse to let the system bring them down by spreading awareness with the world music from their own countries. As we know, they are from different countries. So there is one of our friend, Assad, who is performing in the music band. So we will have a chat with some of the performance later on. So let's have some music or sound.
Can you please tell us about Citadel? Because this is the week of Citadel.
We came together about a year ago, myself and Norbert next to me. We were collecting guitars for people in direct provision. And we started teaching music. And well, I didn't start it. We got some teachers in to teach guitar. And soon other people joined who already played music and started playing together, and we decided to form a band after a successful World Music Day in the pub across the road. And so we have been performing all over the place, in Cork, Culture Nights, in Limerick, Dolan's Warehouse, a little bit everywhere. We all, everyone performs a song from their country, one or two songs from their country, and the other ones accompany them. There's about 9 countries represented in our band.
Yep. I realized most of the band members are in the refugees, the asylum seeker. Since it is the refugee week, what message will you give to them, to the asylum seekers and refugees in Ireland?
Well, we all know that there's a lot of problems still, you know, and there's a lot that needs to change. The right to work needs to change, but for me, direct provision is a serious problem for people who are there for years. So the system needs to change, the IPO needs to change, the way people are interviewed is actually very bad, so there's a lot needs to be done.
Do you think Citadel as a group can manage to send a message on the refugees?
I think so. I think everywhere we've gone, we never say where we come from, but we say it during the event, and people are very astonished and surprised. And the subject of conversation will always be direct provision afterwards. So it's creating awareness in a very positive way. So yeah, I think we do have an impact on this.
Like people live in direct provision, if you know how many things, like bad things the people in direct provision are facing, is a weapon for us, and we want to just to help even others, people in direct provision living in that other hostels, just to help themselves. Because when you are playing music, when you are, so you fight with loneliness, as you know, like people living in direct provision, they can be stuck there, staying in direct provision for 10, 6, 4 years. As myself, I'm there for 3 years. I never get any reply, even like we are. I don't know if you are celebrating Refugee Day or we are commemorating. I can't say like we are celebrating, because to be a refugee is no good thing. And we celebrate something which is good. As we know, it was not a good thing for us to do. But as we know from our country is facing many kind of problem. People are fighting, people are dying there, and nobody care, and even nobody care in this country about our problem. So I think Star Citadel have a plan just to help even other people living in the direct provision facing same problem like us.
Hi, my name is Sylvie, and I joined that group
2 to 3 months ago. And today I'm performing a traditional song, you know, so it's going to be kind of with a tabla, you know, and it's with drums as well. So I'm very happy to join it. I'm learning a lot about that. The Citadel is a group of multicultural people, you know, not a single person. It's going to be like different cultures that we are having over here, you know, so I'm really enjoying it.
I'm very happy. I'm actually representing two groups right now. My radio class fellows are here as well, and my band is here as well, and I'm feeling really proud and happy to be representing the both of them, and I'm really feeling proud. This is the moment for me.
I am enjoying with the band, but I really like, I'm so happy with them, but I now at the moment I can't, I am singing, just I am company with them.
Our final feature of our program, Life in Limbo, Any Hope for the Future, is a panel discussion with the creators of this radio program to discuss their reflections of the course and of making this program. Friends, this is our last segment of the program, and as you know that this program has been created by the asylum seekers who learned this course, QQIE Level 3 course on media expression, which was conducted with the support of CFI, Creole, UCC, and County Radio Yall. So I would like to know the learning experience from the participants of this course, that how do they feel right now after the learning of whole week, how they are feeling right now, what they have learned, what kind of challenges they faced. So I would like to go first to Dudu. So how is that she's feeling now?
I am very happy, and I've learned a lot. The knowledge that I have now, it's so different from what I had. It was like I was blank, but now I know, and I think I've got more confidence on whatever I'm doing, and I'm looking forward to do more of this as a I can tell that there are so many changes that need to be done. So long as we are here, we want to end the subject like life in the limbo.
Do you think there were some kind of challenges during the week when you were recording the people, when you were on the road, you were interviewing people? So were there any kind of challenges you faced? Fumi, why don't you say something on this?
Thank you so much, Hassad. It's been a very beautiful week. I've learned a whole lot. I can confidently design a radio program now, which I couldn't do before Monday, the 21st. I've gained a whole lot, and I'm ready to advocate. I'm ready to go into radio world. I've learned a whole lot. Although it got to a point, I got overwhelmed, I was tired, but I just kept on pushing. Thanks to Terry, the trainer. She did a very good job. She pushed me, yes. She pushed me, she made me learn a whole lot. Thanks to Dara of CRY 104 FM and Linda. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate. I'll never trade the experience for anything in the whole world. Thank you so much for pushing us, guys. We appreciate.
That's great. Every one of us learned a lot during the previous week. But the reality is that we are still in direct prevention system. We are still waiting for our applications to be decided by Justice Office. So we are still concerned about the system. So I would like to know the opinion of every one of us, that what is the one thing, what is the one specific thing which is disturbing you and you want to change it? So I would go first to Dudu.
Accommodation and work.
And now we go to Dolapo.
Prefer people application should be speed up
so that they can move on with their lives.
Concilia, what do you think about it?
Those who have got qualifications like nurses and teachers and doctors to be allowed to work in the field.
Mandy?
I have only three issues, like about the work permit, they should have remove all the barriers like transport and the license issue. And the second thing, the people who they got already paper, they have to move on. And the third thing, I would say, they have to make this process shorter because the people, they are waiting for their decision from long, long time. So they have to consider this thing, really. That would be helpful.
Fumi, what do you think about it?
Still talking about delaying decision of application. People are tired. People have spent years in the centers. They are tired. People have been there for 5, 10, 15 years. Yes, government needs to do something about it. People are getting depressed every day by day. Yes, that's one. And secondly, we need capable management. Management that is ready to work. Management that won't be biased. We need good management in centers. Thank you so much.
That's it, listeners, from us. We are still in a direct proving system, and every one of us have different experiences. So we want to change the delays, as you have heard that everyone was talking about the delay in the decision of applications. So we want that to be quicker. The system should be quicker, and the job opportunities should be made available to the asylum seekers.
This brings us to the end of the program, Life in Limbo, Any Hope for the Future. We thank our listeners for staying with us through the duration of the program. We hope that you have learned a whole lot about the realities of direct provision and asylum seekers. We would also like to thank our trainer, Terry, Linda and Darren of CRY 104 FM for guiding and training us in the preparation of our radio program. Now signing off, I'm Fumi.
And I'm Asad.
Until next time, see you and be safe. Thanks to all those who contributed to the making of this program.
Today's program, Life in Limbo, Any Hope for the Future, was funded by Community Foundation for Ireland and supported by Crowell and CRY 104 FM. Special thanks to Gertrude Cotter, staff and students, UCC for their contributions and support in the running of this media course.